I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, straight out of the same activist playbook, the similarities between Seattle's CHOP and the protest zones now popping up on college campuses across the country are too many to ignore. Plus, candidate for Attorney General Pete Serrano joins us to talk about gun rights. And a Seattle Times article proves that not even the leftists believe that housing is a human right. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I saw a comparison pop up on social media, and now that I've seen it, the more I think about it, the more it makes sense to me, and I want to talk about it in detail because this is the activist playbook. This is the proof that for the far left extremists in this country, it doesn't matter what the issue is. They follow the same playbook, and politicians let them get away with it. And when that happens, they follow the same playbook again when the next cause comes up that they want to put their efforts behind. So the thing I saw on social media was a comparison between Seattle's CHOP, the Capitol Hill occupied protest back in the summer of 2020, and the protests that are now happening at college campuses across the country, including at Columbia. So you'll remember CHOP very well. It happened six square blocks around Seattle's East Precinct. The protesters took it over in the name of racial justice. They renamed the precinct the Seattle People's Department and took it over and basically said, we're going to be autonomous. We're going to have our own government and rules don't apply to us here. And we all know how that went. More on that in a moment. And then we're seeing the same thing at Columbia, big sign as you enter the zone where they've set up tents. Welcome to the People's University for Palestine. So it's not just the visual cues that are very, very similar between what happened in Seattle and CHOP and what's happening now at some of these college campuses. The response from people in positions of power is very similar. People who have taken on a great deal of responsibility and who don't use that responsibility to do what's right. At Columbia, amid these anti-Semitic protests and this, you know, camping sit-in that they've created, what is Columbia? How is Columbia responding to that? Well, we told you on the show yesterday that they responded to it by telling students, Jewish students and staff, don't come to campus. Telling students that they were going to, on Monday, do remote classes. And after that, you'd think, well, gosh, Columbia's got to stand up and say, no, get these tents out of here. Get these anti-Semites out of here. Expel them. Let's get kids back to class for the last week. We only got 1 week of classes left. No, what do? They cancel classes for the rest of the year. Remote learning for the rest of the year at Columbia. Because Columbia doesn't have a backbone. Again, very similar to how the six square blocks of CHOP, the six square blocks of a community with businesses, with residents, with a police precinct, were taken over for a month. The needs of the community around CHOP completely disregarded for the wants and the demands of a handful of people. Also similar to what happened in Seattle, elected leaders are looking at these protests across the country on college campuses where there have been demonstrable acts of violence, and they're calling it peaceful, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
It is especially important that we remember the power of young people shaping this country today, of all days, as we once again witness the leadership of those peaceful student-led protests on campuses like Columbia, Yale, Berkeley, and many others.
Peaceful, huh? Despite video evidence to the contrary, despite Jewish students saying they feel like their lives are in danger. AOC calling what's happening on college campuses peaceful reminds me of another elected leader calling something peaceful.
We've got four blocks in Seattle that you just saw pictures of that is more like a block party atmosphere.
How long do you think Seattle in those few blocks looks like this?
I don't know. We could have the summer of love.
And of course, we know CHOP wasn't a summer of love. People died at CHOP. We didn't need the deaths to happen before most of us with a brain said that this was a recipe for disaster, much like what we're seeing at some of these college campuses, that it is a recipe for disaster. It is a recipe for violence, because we've seen the playbook play out already. And it's the same one. And again, I would just say that there's already been, if not blatant violence, there has also been clear calls for violence. I'll just start at NYU, where there's been protests, pro-Palestine protest, and scuffles between protesters and cops in the streets. Looks pretty similar to CHOP to me, and it won't be long before the activists in the left wing and Democratic politicians go after the NYPD, saying that they were the aggressors, that they were being violent. Same playbook. How about these chants from protesters at Columbia? So let me, if in case you couldn't hear what the protesters there were chanting, Al-Qassam, you make us proud. Take another soldier out. Referring to leader of Hamas. We say justice, you say how? Burn Tel Aviv to the ground. Hamas, we love you. We support your rockets too. Red, black, green, and white, we support Hamas's fight. It is right to rebel. Al-Qassam, give them hell. It is right to rebel. Hamas, give them hell. That's just a call for murdering Jewish people. And we saw very similar types of protest chants at CHOP, which I would consider, again, explicit calls for violence. I'm reminded of the protester who, right in front of Seattle City Council members, told an officer, screamed at an officer to put his gun in his mouth and pull the trigger. And the Seattle City Council member at the time, Teresa Mosqueda, said nothing. So when I hear those chants, again, burn Tel Aviv to the ground, Hamas, we love you, we support your rockets too, compare that to AOC saying these are peaceful protests, reminds me a lot of CHOP. Reminds me a lot of not only explicit acts of violence and destruction, but calls for violence and destruction. And political leaders who either ignored it, condoned it, partook in it, made us believe that what we were seeing with our own eyes wasn't happening. Let's see, at the University of Michigan, there was a picture sent out of some flyers that were being distributed there, because don't get this wrong. This isn't just anti-Israel. This isn't just, as if it's not bad enough, anti-Jewish. What's happening on these college campuses is blatantly, blatantly anti-American. And I'm not saying protests are anti-American. Protests are, to their core, American. Peaceful protests that don't disrupt other people's ability to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. That is very American. That's not what these are. But what I'm saying is anti-American is the actual message. So again, University of Michigan, there were some flyers handed out to protesters by an anarchist group. And at the end of it, it said, freedom for Palestine means death to America. Freedom for Palestine means death to America. Protesters talking about death to America on our college campuses. Now, there are, of course, a lot of local ties to these protests that are happening, anti-Palestine, pro-Hamas, whatever you want to call them. So as we speak, across the state of Washington, there were school walkouts planned. Now, they're all at different times, schools across the state, student groups that have put out flyers saying, walk out, you know, in solidarity with Palestine. So we don't know the extent of the walkouts at this hour. I think we'll know more tomorrow about what happened and what, if anything, the school district's responses were. But I want to point out something to you about this that shows that this isn't some sort of natural, organic student uprising. No, this is dangerous activists infiltrating our schools, your schools, your child's school, via the internet, and trying to turn them into extremists, spreading anti-Semitism, anti-Jewish propaganda, anti-Israel propaganda. What's my proof for that? Well, just look at the flyers. My friend Ari Hoffman put this together. Look at the flyers that were posted for Newport High School, Issaquah High School, Redmond High School, Sammamish High School, Evergreen High School, Eastlake High School. They're all the same. Same fonts, same imagery, same messaging. Protests might be at different times. Again, this isn't some sort of organic student uprising. This is the result of dangerous activists who are trying to teach our youth as young as possible to believe in these things, to do these things. They are training the next generation of dangerous activists. And this isn't, again, the way that these student walkouts were publicized and advertised were not anti-genocide, anti-war. Lord knows this country has a long history of anti-war protests. I'm sure a lot of you watching either participated in anti-war protests or had parents who participated in anti-war protests. I know I did. My father was an anti-war protester. There's nothing wrong with being anti-war. And if these students were walking out in protest specifically about what's happening in Gaza and wanting to make sure that innocent people aren't killed, this wouldn't be something, in my estimation, that was wrong, that went too far. But again, how these student-led, I say that very loosely because I think they're activists-led, forced upon students. This is how this is being advertised. This is from Redmond Students League. Please remember, do not assume the administration is our friend. Protect your identity. Cover your face. Do not engage with Zionists. Why do you need to cover your face? Isn't this a peaceful walkout? And then inside the flyer, this is Kim Schreier, your representative in Congress, and she is pro-Israel. Well, Congresswoman Kim Schreier is Jewish. So here they are targeting a Jewish member of Congress with her picture. This is Kim Schreier. She's pro-Israel. As they're feeding, again, this pro-Hamas, anti-Israel mindset into children in our public schools. Oh, and oh, by the way, here's your member of Congress on the east side. She's pro-Israel. Yeah, she's also Jewish. So what did our elected leaders have to say about all of this? I mean, surely we learned lessons from CHOP. We've seen this playbook, this exact playbook in action over and over and over. We saw what happened with CHOP. We saw what happens when elected leaders do not speak up as early as possible to prevent violence, to prevent hate. So surely Governor Inslee has learned his lesson by now. Well, maybe not. Ari Hoffman in the Post-Millennial wrote, despite anxiety from Jewish parents and students, dozens of schools signing on to the action, OSPI's statement, and them, one of the participants in calling for these school walkouts, claiming responsibility for shutting down the freeway in the Seattle, Mike Falk, a spokesperson for Governor Jay Inslee, dismissed the concerns about the school walkouts, telling Ari, quote, I've never heard of this group or any mention anywhere else of this event being organized, so it's hard to gauge how massive it will be. The screenshots Ari provided him of the flyers and the group that was involved in it and planning it and talking about it on social media, he said of those, the screenshots provide very few details, and they don't portend the event would be anti-Semitic. in the unlikely event we did ever see a mass anti-Semitic walkout statewide, that would merit a strong rebuke from the governor. So again, you know, Ari does his story and he compiles all this publicly available information on people who are pushing the school walkouts, on the fact that one of them who's organizing it claimed responsibility for shutting down I-5 for 5 hours, on other people participating who have said and posted clearly anti-Semitic things, clear hate speech. Ari compiles all of that. He sends it to the governor's office for comment. And the response from Mike Falk, the governor's communications officer, is they find it very unlikely, in the unlikely event that this actually happens and it's anti-Semitic, then yeah, I guess we would rebuke it, suggesting, well, I've never heard of this group that Ari found all this publicly available information on. I've never heard any mention of it anywhere else. Hard to gauge how massive it would be. So essentially, the governor's office and Governor Jay Inslee would rather just say, well, we don't know about that. I don't know. I haven't heard about that at all until you told me, Ari. What does that remind you of? Well, reminds me a lot of CHOP.
Well, that's news to me, so I'll have to reserve any comment about it. I have not heard anything about that.
Haven't heard anything about that. Same governor, 4 years apart, same playbook from the activists, same response from our so-called elected leaders. And we all just put him back in office. 4 years from now, if you have a Governor Bob Ferguson and something come up, you can expect the exact same playbook again. Again, a playbook that these politicians would never fall for hook, line, and sinker if these were right-wing extremists doing exactly the same thing. The playbook works for the left-wing extremists because the media gives them cover, the politicians give them cover, and it's the rest of us who suffer. During CHOP, it was the business owners, it was the residents, it was the police officers, it was the community at large that suffered. It was the families of the people killed at CHOP who suffered. During these protests happening now, the occupied protests at universities like Columbia, who's suffering? It's all of the other students who are now forced to capitulate and learn from home, which we know doesn't work, who are told that they're not going to be able to come back to campus for the rest of the school year. Jewish faculty at Columbia that were told, don't come here, it's not safe. And the Jewish community at large that sees what's happening, that sees the blatant hate and anti-Semitism, and sees people in positions of power doing nothing about it. We haven't learned anything. We didn't learn anything from CHOP. If anything, our response to CHOP has allowed stuff like this to happen because these same activists are emboldened. And just for the fun of it, what I'll say is, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have a governor? What would my response have been from the governor's office if I was his communications director? And I was aware that there have been all these protests, many of them blatantly anti-Semitic, that all these things currently are happening across the country, that there are flyers everywhere of student walkouts, that it just takes a quick search to figure out that the people behind them have said anti-Semitic things. What would my response be if I was telling Governor Inslee what to say? Something along the lines of, there has been a troubling spike in anti-Semitism. There's no place for that level of hate in our communities, in our school districts, on our college campuses, anywhere. And as the governor, I am telling school districts to tell students that there would be swift and severe consequences if they walk out of class and engage in protests that make other students feel unsafe or that are characterized by hate speech. And I would tell people that we're monitoring it, that we're going to do something about it, that we have a plan in place, that we've talked to the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, that we've been in touch with our local police departments, that they know when things have crossed the line into being illegal. I would, as the governor, put out a statement to Jewish families saying, we know this is a challenging time for you. We stand with you. You wouldn't say, well, we don't know if this is going to happen. I haven't really heard of this at all. And by the way, Nicole just saw, so far in Seattle, about 150 students, including from Garfield High School, this is from the Seattle Times, and the Center School, gather near Cal Anderson Park. Oh, there's your other connection. They just returned to the Capitol Hill-occupied protest zone, right in the heart of it, for these walkouts, demanding, some carried signs according to the Times, "We demand a free Palestine and Zionism is fascism." Unreal. Is it, can we get a strong rebuke now, Governor? That's what your communications guy said. In the unlikely event that we ever did see a mass anti-Semitic walkout statewide, that would merit a strong rebuke from the governor. I'm not expecting that, because when there were anti-Semitic protests at the University of Washington, the governor's alma mater, he didn't say anything. Why would he say anything now? Why say anything now? You know, you've got 12 years of not saying jack. Why start in the last 8 months of your term? Just see this thing through with your cowardice all the way to the end. And then I saw Dave Reichert's campaign. Did exactly what I would have suggested the governor do. Why is it that a political candidate is being more forceful about these things than the actual sitting governor? It's just a refreshing taste of like what a sane governor would look like, who actually speaks out when things are happening that are wrong, regardless of what side of the political aisle is perpetrating them. Because again, we all know if these were right-wing neo-Nazis, the governor would be holding a press conference as we speak. As we speak, calling for these students who walk out and engage in anti-Semitic behavior to be expelled. So Dave Reichert puts out a statement earlier today in advance of the walkouts, saying as thousands of high school and college students across Washington plan staged walkouts today against the Jewish State of Israel, former King County Sheriff and GOP frontrunner Dave Reichert says any threats or violence directed toward our Jewish community cannot be tolerated. He goes on to say, "Freedom of speech is nothing I take lightly, but it simply cannot violate the safety and well-being of our families, friends, and neighbors. Specifically, the harassment and intimidation of Jewish people that we are witnessing locally and across the country is a stain on our nation that must be wiped clean." How hard is that? How hard is that? Genuinely, how hard is that? I'm not even mad, I'm just disappointed, as our mothers would tell us. Because it's past the point of being mad to I'm just sort of sad and disappointed that these are the people who run our states, who run our country, who run our college campuses, who have no moral clarity, no moral consistency. Bob Ferguson, who also wants to be the next governor, he didn't say anything for years about CHOP, said nothing about CHOP. About the riots downtown, said nothing about the closure of I-5, and now he's thinking, well, maybe I won't win the governor's office as easily as I thought I would. So he said something when the anti-Semites blocked the road to SeaTac. That was the first time ever. But you know what? Fine. I'm going to remind people that it's the first time you've spoken out. But if it takes a governor's race to get you to finally speak out and condemn what's happening on the left, so be it. We cannot fix this until we decide that we're going to choose leaders who, regardless of political party, will absolutely do what's right and say what needs to be said. Who they anger with it be damned. So again, same playbook from the activists. CHOP, Columbia University, what's next? Because the playbook works, so they're going to keep referring to it. All right, coming up next, we sat down with Pete Serrano, who's running for attorney general, who, despite a lot of dissent within the Republican Party, seems to have pretty overwhelming support. And so we're going to talk to him a little bit about gun control and gun rights. First, I have encouraged you guys, if you're like not looking or feeling your best, you know you need to lose a little weight like I did last year, to give Eastside Weight Loss Clinic a chance. I lost almost 30 pounds in my first 2 months. I'm down about 40 pounds total. And if you wanted to maybe, I don't know, drop a few pounds before summer, if you start the program now, this is not an atypical result. to lose 20 to 30 pounds in about a month or two. So start with just a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Ask them any questions you have before you commit. Not every weight loss program is right for every person. So make sure you do that consultation before you sign up. And then if you're on the program and those pounds start coming off, tell me all about it. All right, so we had a little of, I wouldn't say fun at the expense of the Washington State Republican Party on the show yesterday, but certainly their convention to me was just disarray and made them look completely chaotic. And there was a lot of dissent among the delegates at the state GOP convention about who to support in a variety of races. I mean, definitely the governor's race, but then down the line, except for one statewide race. So Pete Serrano, who's running for Washington Attorney General, got like 99% support among the delegates, near unanimous support, which, considering how divided that room was, is pretty remarkable. So obviously, he's speaking to people. So a couple weeks ago, we've been taping for our series of election interviews, 2024 election interviews. We had Pete Serrano in, and this was before, obviously, the GOP convention. And we talked about a lot of things, but one of the parts of that conversation I really found interesting and sort of this dilemma is you have this guy who has been fighting for gun rights. You know, he has this legal entity that we talked about on the show the other day. He's behind the lawsuit against the state's mag ban, for instance, high capacity magazine ban. So I wanted to know, like, what would you do in the office of attorney general when it's your job to defend the will of the people? If the people of Washington State pass an initiative into law, for instance, that you just fundamentally disagree with? Let's talk about an area where maybe your personal beliefs might conflict with that job of doing what's best for or what the citizens want you to do. Your foundation has fought back a lot against the gun control policies. Typically, when gun control issues are before Washingtonians or they're pulled on that issue, they seem to be fine with it, by and large. Obviously, there's an inherent constitutional push and pull there between what the citizens support and what you support. But for instance, if there's an issue related to gun control that comes up that the citizens seem to be in favor of, but you, I believe, would be opposed to, how do you handle something like that?
Yeah, at the end of the day, my position is I advise the legislature on that and say, hey, look, the bottom line is this is not a constitutional. Here's your analysis as to why. And we saw this happen this year. You know, our organization is a 501c3, didn't lobby. You know, we've got limitations on where we can be. But the NRA, I know, was very vocal and other organizations were very vocal on the various gun bills. And in talking to some of those lobbyists, the comments they received from the legislature was, we know it's unconstitutional, sue us, right? I mean, we can't continually have that notion of this is my prerogative, therefore I will do, right? Having an attorney general who says, look, here's my analysis, you know, and in watching some of those bills, and not just gun bills, but there are various bills where, you know, the first two to three people, Trudy Inslee or Jay Inslee, or rarely ever Bob Ferguson.
Oh, that they've donated.
Yeah, not that they've donated, but they'll show up. They'll get they'll show up and testify on behalf or against the bill, right? And so when you see a bill that says at the request of the governor, at the request of the attorney general, and Trudy Inslee or Jay Inslee or Bob Ferguson, or there's a lady named Kristen Bineski who's the first assistant attorney general, they show up and they testify. They're clearly advancing a position that that agency, whether it's the governor's office or the AG's office, will take. And so rather than saying, hey, I'm walking lockstep with you, saying, look, I get 3 minutes and here are the constitutional violations. I can give you the case law. If you want them, they've already been provided to you.
So you're willing to show up at hearings as the attorney general and testify against bills that you do not think are constitutional.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like that because I think it's one thing to advise people privately, and we know our current attorney general, he's all about privacy. Can I hide documents from people? Can I keep information from people? Whatever it is. So, you know, you can do that quiet consultation, but if they're not listening, like, Pete's going to be in there, like, telling. Because I want people to know. Sometimes when the private consultation happens and then you don't make a big deal out of it publicly, it's like, we don't know what happened behind the scenes.
Well, exactly. I mean, I still remember early in the COVID litigation, back before you were doing this, when you were at your last job, I had emailed you and you'd had some records that I needed.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And that was my first introduction to you. And, you told me where I could find them, and mm-hmm. I got them, right? I mean, why is it so difficult to have to continually make these same requests for the same records mm-hmm. that have been produced? The government should be more transparent, not less transparent. That's another yep. issue that I want to hammer on is, look, the AG's office has $700 million. Mm-hmm. That's what's allocated currently. Certainly with Serrano as AG, it's probably not going to be that.
Good, good.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine the legislature is going to want to give me that kind of money, and I don't think I'll need it. But let's assume it stays that, and we have 1,200 staff. How many of those millions of dollars, and I know the answer is it's not millions, are allocated towards public disclosure?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if I could revamp the office and retool it and streamline public disclosure requests?
Yeah. Speaking my language, you know I love a good PDR. So that's part of my conversation with Pete Serrano, Republican running for Attorney General, as we speak. That entire conversation is posted on Patreon and Locals, so go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. So that entire conversation, no paywall, is up on our pages. All right, we'll have a double dose of Unbelievable coming up next. First, I encourage you guys to take the First Mark Challenge so you can save money on insurance, get better insurance, have an insurance broker handle everything for you for free, and just take a lot of stress out of your life. And some of you do listen to me, like our friend Ben Bailey.
The overall savings, if I look at the four different policies that we, you know, we've initiated here as of last week. Yeah, last week. So we're saving about $1,500 a year, which is pretty substantial. The bulk of that being in homeowners, but also, you know, also the auto policy came down a bit.
Yeah, you could be like Ben, just saving money, also looking very svelte, because Ben is dedicated to the show. And he also lost a bunch of weight on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. Just three cheers for Ben. So if you want to see, maybe you can save some money, maybe you need better insurance, maybe you got a letter from your carrier saying they're going to drop you because you did something small, reach out to First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, and take the First Mark Challenge. They'll go through your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs, go out, shop the market, and come back to you with recommendations. It all just makes your life so much easier. firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. The most toxic... let's not give her that much credit, one of the most toxic political figures in Seattle history moved away a few years ago to go try to destroy Detroit further. And I just found out that she's back in town. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. Why, Nikita Oliver? So if you don't know who Nikita Oliver is, she used to go to by they, them at some point, but I don't work for the mainstream media anymore, so I'm not going to do word soup trying to figure out what your pronouns are. Nikita Oliver ran for city council, lost, thankfully, ran for mayor of Seattle, lost, although not by as much as I think she should have. And she's like a socialist, democratic socialist, maybe a full-blown socialist, a little bit of Shama Sawant like following, but I think even more out there. She moved a few years ago to go do, you know, work in Detroit on this on the activism front. And I was like, wow, hashtag blessed. Just a good thing for Seattle, because she was really good at getting the fringes all riled up. And then I saw that there was a rally yesterday as the U.S. Supreme Court considers this case out of Oregon that will decide whether homeless camping bans amount to cruel and unusual punishment. So you have all these housing is a human right people coming out of the woodwork and holding these protests in anticipation of what they know is going to happen, that SCOTUS is going to say, yeah, that's not cruel and unusual punishment. So in Seattle, for a rally, there were two speakers that really caught my eye. Obviously, one of them was Nikita Oliver, who was scheduled to speak at the event. And then also joined by Ty Reid. You remember Ty Reid? So Ty Reid was the campaign director for Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who was that crazy police abolitionist running for Seattle City Attorney against Ann Davison. And you might recall that Nicole Thomas Kennedy hit all these insane tweets. And then when I was at Fox, I did a story about how Ty Reid's tweets were even crazier. Like she was, this is one of them, this B-I-T-C-H, Mayor Durkin, is going to get her ass beat one day. And then she said, prayers the victim is a cop, referring to somebody who was shot and killed. Had a tweet saying that she wanted Joe Biden to take his last breath, called Carmen Best and Uncle Tom MF-er. I mean, the certifiably, these are the kind of people we're talking about, certifiably insane. So our friend Jonathan Cho covered this rally, and here is a little clip from it.
Being homeless, being poor is not a crime. It is a failure of the white supremacist, classist system that we live under. Housing is a human right. And the way that we have structured our society says that we value corporations and the rights of wealthy people more than we do the rights of everyone else.
Oh, gosh. Go back to Detroit, please. Oh, my gosh. I love that she says it's our housing issue is a result of, like, white supremacist structure. I don't know about you, but most of the people I see who are homeless in Seattle are white. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a monolith, but most people I see who are homeless on the streets of Seattle doing drugs are white. So I don't know where she's coming from there. But that sentiment of the housing is a human right sentiment, you know, there is a fringe activist class that believes that, that supports, you know, squatting in homes that don't belong to you, that and not necessarily like homes that are already occupied. But I remember at one point they were putting out lists of empty homes for people to go squat in, essentially. And they really do believe, I mean, it's socialism, obviously, that you shouldn't have to pay for housing, that housing is a human right. But in our second dose of unbelievable today, there's a story out of the Seattle Times that actually, to me, disproves the notion that leftists actually believe that housing should be free. This story is crazy. I don't like to read a lot from stories on the show because I don't want to bore you, but this is crazy. So the Seattle Times does a story on how, this is the headline, unpaid rent in low-income housing skyrocketed and evictions may be next. So the whole premise of this story is about how in low-income housing complexes, that over the last few years in particular, the balances of unpaid rent are insane. And it's causing, imagine that, all sorts of problems. It's hurting the ability of these low-income housing providers to be able to build more housing because they're not bringing money in, right? And it's so bad, in fact, that these leftist organizations want the government to make it easier for them to evict some of these low-income people who aren't paying rent. I'm going to read from this article for you. In Seattle and across the country, nonprofits that operate low-income housing face a skyrocketing balance of unpaid rent. In the Seattle area, the total rent debt across all tenants is estimated at $170 million, the vast majority of it belonging to low-income households. Across the country, the total is almost $10 billion. Many housing providers say the amount of overdue rent has grown dramatically since before the pandemic and is hurting their ability to maintain and build more affordable housing in a region and nation that is starved for it. These organizations, whose missions include bringing and keeping people off the street, have begun to evict non-paying tenants to bring in paying ones. Well, imagine that. Oh, isn't that capitalism? Well, we got to make money. You can't give them this unit for free. So this person that I brought in from the streets and they're not paying rent, like, you got to go. I got to bring in somebody who's actually going to pay rent. Some fear more evictions are on the way. Housing providers have been meeting with local, state, and federal officials to come up with solutions, and in some cases, asking to make it easier to evict tenants. Gee, and we know that these homeless service providers, by and large, especially in the Seattle area, are leftists. 100%. And it's really odd because as we talk about just, you know, private sector landlords who are dealing with these insane situations where tenants are taking them for 2 years' worth of rent, the leftists don't speak up. They paint that as evil landlords. Interesting. But now it's the leftist organizations and the nonprofits that are bringing people in off the streets that are saying, we need to make it easier to evict these people. So you want to evict the poorest people. Wow, very woke of you. The Seattle Times article goes on. Wait before you do it, Nicole, because you haven't read this. What do you think some people blame?
COVID.
Oh, good job. Always COVID. Yeah. I'll give it to the Seattle Times, though. It moves past that argument pretty quick into an argument that is actually true. Okay. So it says the increase in unpaid rents can be traced to the pandemic, which was a hurricane of economic disruptions, especially at the lowest rungs of the ladder, for the love. It'll be 2045 and they'll still be the lingering economic impact on poor Americans from the pandemic. And then meanwhile, they say nothing at all about like the rising cost of gas and the Climate Commitment Act, none of that. So anyway, but then it goes on to what the truth was and what coincided with the pandemic. What else started during the pandemic? Protections for renters. Not just protections, but renters were shielded from eviction if they weren't paying rent, even if they didn't have to prove need, even if they had the same job and the same income that they did before the pandemic started. And I'll give credit to the Seattle Times and some people they spoke to were say that they say this is it. It wasn't the pandemic that caused this. It was the policies passed in the pandemic. It says much of the low-income housing industry believes that government programs designed to shield renters from the economic impacts of the pandemic created a habit of not paying rent. In 2020, an eviction moratorium was enacted where landlords were prohibited from kicking out tenants with few exceptions. If a tenant stopped paying rent, their balance of unpaid rent would grow, but they could stay in their home for as long as the moratorium was in effect. Then, pandemic relief funds provided one-time rental assistance that wiped the slate clean for many tenants. Housing providers said a significant number of tenants are still not paying because they got used to spending their income on other needs or maybe hoping for more rental assistance. That's exactly what happened. And it's not just in the low-income areas. It's not just in low-income housing. We've been screaming. All of a sudden, the Seattle Times and these groups want to pay attention to this because it's low-income housing and low-income people and formerly homeless people who are going to get booted out because they didn't pay rent. When we've talked about hardworking Washingtonians who have a rental unit here and there, and they've had people in there taking advantage of the laws, these same laws, using the same COVID-era laws to just steal a place to live. So now it's like they're finally coming around because they also see the ripple effects of what happens when people don't pay rent. Excessive rent loss will decimate Seattle's community of nonprofit housing providers. We will not have the financial resources to maintain the housing, make mortgage payments, or meet the obligations of our lenders. Interesting. So you're telling me if people don't pay rent to you, you're going to be in a difficult position? You won't have the financial resources to maintain housing or make mortgage payments to meet the obligation of your lenders? It says the shortfalls are also making it more difficult to add new affordable housing, said Lisa Vatsky, a director of the Washington State Housing Finance Commission, a state agency that oversees public funding and programs for housing. Banks are increasing requirements for organizations to receive loans for new affordable housing projects because they see the unpaid rent balances as a high risk, which ultimately decreases the number of units being built. I cannot make a better argument than these leftist organizations are making for why you have to make sure people are paying rent. Why landlords have to have the ability to evict people in a reasonable and timely manner. Look at the societal ripple effect from this. You've got people who were, in some cases, formerly homeless. You get them into low-income housing. They don't pay rent, or they stopped paying rent because of the policies that were put in place. Those policies protected them, sometimes for a year or 2 years, where they wouldn't be evicted. Then all of a sudden, they've got this big bill of back due rent that they can't pay. And if they can't pay it, then the low-income housing providers, they can't meet their obligations to lenders. And if they can't meet their obligations to lenders on these properties, why would lenders give them loans for more properties? And the governor says, we're in an affordable housing crisis. Well, gosh, it seems like you can find a connection between the affordable housing crisis and our protections for deadbeat tenants. Now, I'll also say, one of the things that occurred to me in reading this is also the result of this housing first mentality when you have people on the streets, of saying, oh, just put a roof over their head and everything else will come naturally. That's just not true. If you throw someone in a house and you haven't gotten any help for them, meaningful help for the reasons they were homeless in the first place, usually drug addiction or mental health, you think that they're going to be able to maintain a steady job, upkeep the unit, or anything like that? No, they're just going to wind up back on the streets. They're not going to pay you rent. So that's part of it too, is putting the cart before the horse. Like, let's get these people help. Let's make sure when you do put them in to one of these available low-income units, that they have their feet underneath them, they've got gainful employment, and they're going to cut rent checks. And that the law doesn't protect them in a way where they don't have to cut rent checks for years and years. It's interesting, again. Huh, maybe housing isn't a human right. Maybe you have to pay for housing. Because if you don't pay for housing, then you're robbing someone else of housing. Interesting stuff. Speaking of housing, if you do have a house, is that a bad segue? If you're thinking about selling your home at any point in 2024, I've encouraged you, go to sellwithwest.com. Call other real estate agents, fine. You know, if you spot one whose face is on a billboard or on a, what else, park bench. Real estate agents, they like their faces out there, right? Park bench, side of a bus. Fine, call the real estate agent whose face is on a park bench. See what they'll offer you, but do not choose an agent until you've reached out to Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. He and his team have an innovative marketing strategy. You won't see it anywhere else. First of all, their pictures, their video of your home will be beautiful, so it's really going to stand out when it hits the market. They can also help you make cosmetic updates to your home, so it's ready as soon as the Fed drops interest rates, which Wes is still pretty confident is going to happen at some point in 2024. If they drop interest rates, that's going to be a nice little rush, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, we're having a rush right now. And when rates drop, you know, assuming that they do, it's going to pick up, you know, even more. And if you want to take advantage of that, it's probably a great time to start that conversation right now. You know, whether you want to sell in the later in the spring, sometime in the summer, or even the fall. If you want to sell in 2024, you know, we're here to start a conversation with you.
Yeah. So sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. Might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com. A better way to sell your home. All right, how about something fun, weird, creepy, bizarre?
I mean, it's kind of fun, but animalistic. It's sad. It's really sad and scary. Yeah,
it is. Look, but if we ignore all the crazy stuff, that's how it gets so bad. It's like, oh, people just ignoring it. No, we can't ignore it. So this is a bona fide news story. I just don't know, having worked in mainstream television, if this was my assignment that I was given, I don't think I could do it with the level of seriousness that this reporter pulls off. Completely deadpan. So there is a Utah middle school embroiled in controversy, as you'll hear from this news report, because some students and parents say furries have taken over their classrooms.
Nearly 75 students and parents showed up facing the school saying they're unhappy with how administration is handling reports of harassment.
Okay. You guys cannot record me without my permission!
This is video a Nebo Middle School student took last week. Parents say there's an issue between some students and others who call themselves furries, or people who enjoy dressing up as cartoonish animals.
Back when I went to school, you know, you couldn't dress that way, you couldn't do certain things, and I think it kind of needs to go back a little bit. Like, I know kids need their own personalities, but it's ridiculous when kids are dressing like animals and licking and biting people. I just don't think that's okay.
But the Nebo School District tells us it's not that extreme. Seth Sorensen says no one was scratching or biting anyone, and that there are a lot of untrue rumors going around.
It actually is not something that's been occurring. In fact, a lot of the information that's been put out there is completely incorrect and inaccurate, and so we're still trying to get on top of that.
Thank you.
This is Strudel, a member of the furry fandom. Though they've been a furry for over a decade, they have their own opinions.
It's crazy that it's escalated to this point where these kids are being so distracting to their peers that their peers want to stage a walkout. So to have, you know, the next generation kind of muddy our name and not represent it very well, it is kind of disappointing.
Strudel believes there should be some limits.
Continue doing things you like, continue dressing up, continue making art, but maybe let's keep it outside of school hours.
Maybe. Even Strudel agrees. Don't lick and bite your fellow students. What I think is funny, and what the internet quickly discovered, is the administration's like, what are you talking about? Like, oh, these students, these parents, they're protesting for no reason. Like, they're not getting bit and licked by humans in cat costumes. I don't know what you're talking about. It took like all of 5 seconds for the internet to find pictures and video of furries in this middle school. This guy named Adam Bartholomew on Twitter said, it's funny how the fake news, and they tagged the Salt Lake Tribune and KSL, which are big stations in Utah, couldn't be bothered to interact with the parents involved. Only ABC4 Utah did, and they aired video directly contradicting the school administration. If Halloween masks aren't allowed to be worn on school property, neither should these. Referring to this little cat mask that somebody was wearing. And then libs of TikTok breaking, photos have surfaced of furries in Nebo School District in Utah. The media and a spokesperson for the school are claiming it's not happening. Definitely don't share this thing that we have photos of that's totally not happening. Again, that's just, it's too much. What is this? What is this? And why do adults abide? Why do adults abide?
I don't understand what's separating these administrators from reality. Well, they're adults. You're all adults. Why are the administrators so ridiculous and out of control? Where are they getting this?
And in Utah.
Are they being threatened behind the scenes?
Well, I think there's always a concern about speaking out. Like, oh, is it, are furries?
Yes.
If I speak out about the furries, is that like the same as speaking out about a trans person or a gay person? Because they lump them all together, right?
But I don't get that. That's not common sense.
No, I know.
So what school are they going to that teaches them that they have to be this ridiculous all of a sudden? Because this is not, I mean, this is new. This is in the last 2 years.
Oh, 100%.
We're ridiculous. So all these different aged adults that are just like, yep. We got to be ridiculous now and support these ridiculous children.
Like, how
they're ridiculous.
I mean, you have multiple students who say they're getting bit by the furries.
Yeah, and kids are real good about lying and like coming together in groups. I mean, there was 100 kids out on the street protesting this and claiming they've seen and interacted with all of these kids that are fighting with them because they, you know, say they're ridiculous for wearing masks to school and whatever. But yeah, kids, I'm sure, could really get everybody together and this, like, and lump it in this big lie. Like,
junior high.
They're telling you what happened.
Just wild. Well, I wonder if the school has to come out and say, okay, maybe this is happening and we just don't see it or something, which is ridiculous. But I mean, this isn't a school environment. When I was in school, not only would we not have been allowed to wear a cat or dog costume, like, what is that? But also, I mean, we had restrictions on how short your shorts could be, and like your sleeves, and how much cleavage you were showing. This is just basic stuff. I saw something, I don't remember who it was on Twitter that posted it, but you know, for instance, with the walkouts and the really anti-Jewish sentiment, at some point I was thinking, well, how can, you know, parents and educators allow this? But then I think they probably agree with it. We forget that, especially in Washington, I'm not saying that's the case in Utah, because that seems very strange for Utah. But here, like, yeah, some of the kids, that's going to be a reflection of probably what they're taught at home, what their parents do. I mean, obviously, there is enough of a population here where our elected leaders who are Democrats can get away with not saying anything about this stuff. And it's because there's a lot of voters who feel that way. So for every, you know, far left voter, there's a parent, there's kids associated with them, and there's teachers. We already know that schools are just a absolute train wreck with like woke ideology. So they want the kids to walk out and protest Israel. Yeah.
I think it's also the parenting thing. It goes both or two different ways in this situation, because I think those kids that are dressed as animals going to school and being ridiculous, like, that's a lack of parenting. Those parents are not involved. 100%. Those parents are not saying, this is how I can raise a productive human in society, because you're raising animals. But I also think that the protesting children, I appreciate the parents that are there supporting them, but they're not going to administration. And that's what the administration is saying. Like, we welcome parents to come and talk to us, because they're saying these parents are just sending their kids out to protest. Well, that's also not the only solution in this case.
Yeah.
Maybe you should try your words. Maybe you should actually interact with somebody before you go to the street and protest other children at the school or whatever. So I actually think it's a breakdown in parenting right now that is on both sides and everywhere, because parents are, you know, do what you need to do.
Well, you be your special snowflake. And it's like, no, you can't dress as a cat. No. Take it off.
No. Your job is to
not Halloween.
Raise a productive member of society. Figure it out.
Yeah, it's insane. But you make a good point, because how many tips have we gotten about stuff happening in schools where we contact the school and they say, this is the first we're hearing about it. So you have parents that complain to us. We love the tips. I keep sending them, right? But then the school, they find out about it because we want to do something about it. So maybe if a parent had complained with the school and the school did nothing about it, then it's like, okay, now you got to go to plan B, which might be the media. So anyway,
breakdown in society right there. It's unbelievable. Can you imagine like our parents seeing that news report? I mean, they would think that is SNL.
It's mental.
It's unbelievable.
Crazy. Yeah, I just love the deadpan reporter. At this school district, there's people who say they get bit by furries. Just like no puns or anything. I mean, it was just such a dry news story. But
the girl in the video, you can't record me. You can't record me.
It's like, dude, if you're wearing at school a cat mask, you want to be recorded. Like, you want the attention. So just accept it. Okay, let's see. Before we get into our daily show poll, questions and comments, and a closing sanity check, our friend Zach Abraham was in Florida last week when he came on the show, and we talked a little bit about Florida's economic environment, its tax environment, and why so many people from Washington decide to move to Florida or retire in Florida.
It's the odd thing about Washington I try to explain to people. If you are a net detractor from the public pot, let's say you're homeless or something like that, you get treated with kid gloves. If you are a contributor to the pot, you get looked at with a side eye and a negativity. And you're just like, wait a second. What other business treats its clients like this, right? Like, I'm putting money into the pot and you treat me like I'm a scourge. You know, it's just bizarre. You know, it's like biting the hand. I just don't get it. And you're going to keep seeing capital flight. But I mean, that's why, right? Socially, politically, financially, it's all the reasons.
Capital flight. I like that he says, too, you don't see businesses treat their clients like that, because that's what the government is, right? Like, we're their client in a certain sense. And so like the disrespect and the overtaxation and the burdens, it's insane. So when it comes to retirement, whether you're going to retire in Washington State or Florida or Arizona or elsewhere, it's really important in this unpredictable environment to protect your retirement. You work hard for it. You only get one. Do not leave it up to chance in a crazy election year, global unrest, fluctuating markets. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. There is absolutely no obligation. It's just a really good way to see if you're overexposed to risk. And if you are, figure out what to do about it. This is what they specialize in. So knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Man, I'm telling you, Nicole, I should just be like a voiceover actor. Listen, okay?
You've already got a job.
A commercial. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results.
Well done.
Nailed it, right?
Can you read it that fast every day? That's what we need.
No, because I respect our viewers and I don't need to read the tiny print that fast. Look, I'm fishing for compliments today. I'm stressed out. Can you help me out with something? Something
well done,
nice.
Brandy. That was really
Thank
fast.
Thank you. Jeez. All right. In our daily subscriber show poll, I wanted to gauge sort of, we're going through this, you know, anti-Semitic. Is it anti-Jewish? Is it anti-Israel? Is it pro-Hamas? Whatever it is. And I do think there's various shades. And I'm not going to call something anti-Semitic that's not blatantly anti-Semitic. I don't think wanting to make sure that innocent civilians in Gaza, children aren't being killed, I don't think that's anti-Semitic. But we see the line blurred so much. So I asked subscribers today a very simple question. Do you believe the following phrase is anti-Semitic? From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That is a phrase we've heard of these protests over and over, including the student-led protests. I'm sure as we speak at Cal Anderson Park, there are students waving signs that say that and saying it. Is that anti-Semitic? Is that hate speech? A lot of you are saying yes. Ed Gradden says, especially considering the vast majority of people saying it have no idea what it means. That's true, too. Heidi says, the fact that people are saying it in the U.S. is what concerns me. No one knows history, which is why it repeats itself. E says, people that say no don't understand what that means and have never been to Israel or Palestine. Dave Keller says, for me, this sentiment is similar to expressions of religious feelings. There must be a space for Palestine to hope for nationality and identity. Furthermore, that expression can coexist in a world where Israel also exists and flourishes. And I do kind of think, I do think a lot of people who say that don't know what it means. And also haven't considered what it could, how it could be taken by a Jewish person who believes that saying that is saying you don't want Israel to exist and not understanding the history and the pain associated with that. Let's see. Stacy says, I did not choose an answer. Honestly, I just don't know and have not researched the history of the phrase or what it may represent to others, so I cannot say either way. I'm sure it could be both depending on who is saying it and their intent. We have many words and phrases that can be both offensive and not depending on context. We most definitely have words that are allowed to be used by certain people and races, no matter the context. Stacey, why can't more people just say I don't have an opinion on that? I love that. I love when people, I mean, obviously I put out polls because I want to hear your opinions on things. But I think it's refreshing when people are like, I don't know enough about that to give you my opinion.
Right.
That's, you know, sometimes I said that on a radio show the other day. It was like, I'm not going to pretend to know anything about that. I haven't looked into it. And it's like, I'd rather just say I don't know than look like a total idiot fumbling around.
Well, I got to say, that's why we do put on a good show every day, because you do the research, right? Well, and that's what the our listeners and our viewers are listening and learning. And that's how we get information out. But yeah, you're correct. I think that this person's correct, because I think that all these kids in schools are just like, come be in this group with me and say this and do this, and they haven't done the research themselves. So for sure, that is the secret to success, right? Knowing what you're talking about and being an educator
and being confident about it. There's been a lot of times where you've put a story in the show sheet and I said, I don't have a strong opinion about that.
Right.
And if I don't have a strong opinion about it one way or the other, or there's not a bigger lesson to learn, I'm like, meh, let's just cut it out of there. So
I'll help.
Yes. And occasionally Nicole will tell me what to think. 100%. So Michelle D'Angelo says, I do, but passing laws for this is going too far. I won't be able to say Jesus is my Lord and Savior. Jews killed him. I don't blame Jewish people. Christians know he needed to die. So I'm anti-Semitic. Yeah, and it's a slippery slope kind of thing. And I'm not saying you throw people in prison for it, but when the school district sends us a statement, or sorry, the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, basically saying, here's our policy for what it means to engage in harassment, and I can't distinguish whether like anti-Jewish sentiment would be harassment, I do think that has to be cut and dry for the sake of rules for students, rules for faculty, to make sure that a school environment is safe and welcoming for everyone, and that they don't feel like they're targeted by harassment, and that the school is just going to look the other way when you have people who are saying anti-Semitic things. I just keep going back to the same example, and this is where I think we should take it back to every time. Would you be using this nuance in how you respond if it were right-wing neo-Nazis? Of course the answer is no. So why now are we just drowning in this nuanced debate of like, oh, well, I don't know. Is it anti-Semitic to say, gosh, what do they say on the in the chants? I got to go back to that chant, because like, would anybody deny that? Say, Hamas, we love you. We support your rockets too. Like, okay. So that seems pretty cut and dry. Do we have to have a nuanced debate? To me, that's just as bad as flying a flag with a swastika. All right, some other questions and comments. Summer CS with a $4.99 super chat. A super chat for yesterday. I'm so disappointed at the GOP in Washington. Yeah. Thank you. It makes me feel a little better for all the hate I took on the internets. On the protest, Delaney Glade says, I still don't think any of them understand what fascism is, 100%. Country Guy, has the chief law enforcement officer for the state and gubernatorial candidate said anything? He's a big law and order guy this week. Nicole, will you see if Bob Ferguson on either of his accounts?
Oh, I did. No.
No? Oh, shocking.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just getting a really strong statement together.
Yeah,
real strong.
He's working on it.
He's working on it, you
Maybe
know?
He was making sure that the kids showed up first.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But it wasn't pretend.
For sure. Ian Armstrong, I literally just got back from a student walkout run by UW Tacoma and Tacoma School of the Arts. The high school staff were only present for student safety. However, there were UW faculty running it. Interesting, Ian. Tell us more about it. Stacy says, I remember when senior skip day was controversial. Yeah. Jackie McWalter Huff. We got in trouble on our senior skip day.
Oh.
Did you guys do senior pranks?
We did. We did senior pranks and senior skip day. And I've said this before, but I was very good at attendance. But
oh,
I
yes.
Planned
we have talked about this.
I planned senior skip day. It was my big, like, my big thing.
Oh, wow. You guys, and the pranks. Tell us where you what your senior prank was. I think I told you ours before. They took, I think it was the principal's car. Mm-hmm. They took the wheels off and put it up on blocks and then hid the wheels, I think, in the middle of the football field or something.
Wow, that's pretty good.
It did not go over well.
Ours was, we went around town, Blaine, and collected all the different signs, like sandwich boards and all that, and put them all in one teacher's yard. And then we got up on the roof and wrote, like, class of 99 or whatever.
So you stole and then vandalized.
Yes. I fell off the roof. So you committed crimes. Yeah, I fell off the roof, too. It was funny because my foot hit the gutter, and I fell off the roof. And it
explains
was
a lot.
Literally one of those moments where everybody stopped and then looked at me, and then I jumped up and said, I'm good.
I'm good. I can see it. Does explain a lot, yeah. Though.
I'm
kidding.
This
is a good one. Jackie McWalter Huff says, people in their early 20s are still finding themselves, and to me it feels like they're being influenced, brainwashed into other people's causes. It's exactly what I said by all those flyers being the same. These are probably adult activists in Seattle who are infiltrating these student groups and saying, do this, here's the flyer. We're not doing a good job as a society of preparing our youth for when they go off to be critical thinkers so they don't fall victim to this abusive power. 100%. We are not teaching kids to be critical, independent thinkers, which is like the most important thing you can teach a child. That's why I've been so critical of parents who want to push their views onto kids. Like, sure, you know, instill your values and all of that in your children, but let them, I don't want to tell you how to parent, but like let them come to their views. And if their views are horrific, then, you know, try a little course correct. But, like, see who they're going to be as a human.
And jumping ahead a little bit, but it kind of ties into that on the furries thing. Mandy says there's an over-focus on individualism rather than sticking to social norms.
Yes.
And
yes.
And you want them to be individual thinkers and think for themselves. And I think that those two, like, being unique and individual and being independent and individual kind of get blurred, and people think it's better to be weird and like nobody else. But no, like that's what keeps us all a community, is that we all have certain values and norms that we are, you know, coming together to live in this society that's functioning. And you don't have to be weird.
Yeah, you can still be cool and unique and special.
Unique is
look at us. We're special snowflakes, you know? We're fine. We're functioning all day to day.
Unique does not mean disruptive to society.
Right.
100%. And everybody else has to revolve around you and all this. Our words are very mischaracterized these days.
How about one more? AE says, just subscribed a week ago, and honestly, great show. I have been missing out. Thank you. Woo-hoo. Welcome. We love it. Before I get to our closing sanity, let's do our closing sanity check first, and then I'll give people a little, a couple days of explanations as to what the next week is going to look like. Okay. I think that's important to do, because we have an exciting, busy, crazy, chaotic week ahead. Let's see. You have to be a special kind of person to make Alec Baldwin look sane. Let's get to it in our closing sanity check. So you may have seen this video by now. Alec Baldwin just trying to get a cup of coffee when he was harassed by one of those pro-Palestine folks.
Alec, can you please say Free Palestine one time? Why did you kill that lady? You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec? No jail time, Alec. You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin.
I'm so sorry.
Free Palestine, Alec, just one time, and I'll leave you alone. I'll leave you alone, I swear. Just say Free Palestine one time. One time. One time.
Call the police.
One time, Alec. You know he's a criminal. You know he's a fucking criminal. Come on, Alec, just say Free Palestine one time. One time, just one time, please. And I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine. Fuck Israel, fuck Zionism. Please say it. One time.
Could you give me one quick favor?
I gotta say, I'm not in favor of violence, but if someone was doing that to me at a coffee shop, I'd probably punch him in the face too. All right, that has been our sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Quick little little thing. So we have a lot of exciting stuff coming up. First of all, Nicole and I are going to both take a vacation, which, as you know, we really need, okay? However, we're not missing a single day of shows. So we'll always have our Sundays with subscribers. So you'll have new episodes while we're away for a week. But also, all next week, we're going to have a special series of episodes. It'll post at noon every day with in-depth interviews, timely interviews. We're going to have Jim Walsh on. Yes, Jim Walsh, to talk about that GOP convention. He's going to be our guest on Monday. We also have a man named David with Gays Against Groomers that I will say was one of the most fascinating interviews I've ever done on this show. So you'll have a whole week of interesting, timely, relevant interviews. And during all of that, we are moving studios. We have been last like month, our new studio is being renovated, made special just for us. So that's very, very exciting. So we've got all that going on. And when we pop back on for a live show on what, the 6th of May?
I believe so.
Yeah, we're going to be in a new space and it's going to be awesome. But again, don't worry, we're not abandoning you. I'm going to Florida, but we have a wonderful series of shows for you. But we'll be back here tomorrow. So it'll be exciting. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you'd like to subscribe to support our show, you can do that for just $5 a month. Especially now, you got to help us cover the cost of that studio remodel. Brandy's suffering, you know? We gotta recoup something here. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com.